So today I will show you the relics we have here. So today we will start to explore the spiritual life based on the writing of St. Francis de Sales. And so we have the relic of St. Francis de Sales here, and also with the relic of St. Jane Francis de Chanel, a friend of St. Francis de Sales that helped to fund, together they found the Visitation Nuns. And then tomorrow is the feast day of St. Francis Xavier. So that tomorrow. And coming Friday will be the feast of St. Nicholas. So here is a relic of St. Nicholas. So we have a number of feast day coming up. Okay, so Introduction to the Devout Life is a spiritual classic that written by St. Francis de Sales. And St. Francis de Sales, you know, he really influenced the spirituality of a few holy people. For example, St. John Bosco. St. John Bosco named his religious order the Salesians, is to name after St. Francis de Sales. So when he started the Salesians, it was having St. Francis de Sales as the patron saint. And then also, Pope John the 23rd had a really, he really liked St. Francis de Sales. He read about his life, he studied his life, and then he was a young man. He said that, you know, if I'm like him, I don't mind who will make me Pope. And so he did prophetic, so he became Pope. And so John the 23rd have influenced by Francis de Sales. And we know that John the 23rd in turn influenced the church in a big way because of the Second Vatican Council. So we see one influence after another. Some of the things, of course, I mentioned that before, our presentation in the last couple months have a pattern. We went through the life of the children of Fatima. We went through the life of some modern saints, starting one with close to Fatima, Blessed Alexandria, but also a few other modern saints and blessed that are lay people, old and young. And then we have different founders that of lay movement and organizations. And then now we finish all the biographies. And now we go into a bit of a theory. A theory. Sometimes can fall people to sleep. That's a theory. Anyhow, so that's usually how I try to alternate my article and presentation, is that for a while we have different story, and then for a while we have different information, and then later on we will go back to some example and story, and then back and forth like that during the whole year. And then I think I mentioned that my intention is that every school year, in when you're talking about theory, it will go through a spiritual classic. So this year is St. Francis de Sales, Introduction to Devout Life. Next year, hopefully, will be Dialogue of St. Catherine of Siena. And the year after, hopefully, will be the about the love that, on the love of God by St. Francis de Sales. And the year after, okay, that's too much. Okay, so Francis de Sales was born in the year 1567. And he died in the year 1622. 1567 to 1622.
Yeah,
1567 to 1622. So his work plus all the example we give is a powerful message of the universal call to holiness, that we are all called to be holy. And that Introduction to the Devout Life is a book that written for lay people. And one of the important messages there is to tell people, you know, don't think that devotion is only for people in the monastery or people who are in religious life. The devotion is for all people. So no matter where you are, there must be devotion. And there should be devotion. And then he also mentioned that, but of course, the kind of devotion would be different according to your vocations. So he said it's ridiculous if a married couple will be live poverty like a Capuchin Franciscan, or like a religious monk will be doing things like a bishop, you know, or a bishop will be like a Confucian monk, you know. So it will be ridiculous. So that should be the kind of devotion should be suitable to your state of life, to where you belong to. So if you are a monk like Santa, and then you act like a Confucian nun, you know, that you are like a hermit all day long, you know, that would be pretty ridiculous, huh? Even though I want her to keep quiet, but you know, to be a Confucian nun would be too much, right? Yeah. Okay, so that's a devotion would be quite ridiculous. So Saint Francis de Sales mentioned, so thinking about devotion, so first of all it must be suitable to your vocation, but also devotion doesn't mean doing this and doing that. And that's also what Saint Teresa said, you know, devotion doesn't consist in doing this and that and that and that. But you know, she said, it's but in the disposition of heart which makes us humble and small in the arms of God. So we have to be like little children before God. So little children, how do they behave toward their parents? They have that loving trust. You know, you trust, have faith, you know, and also you love. But hopefully if you are a good child, you obey. You obey your parents. So to be good child of God, good children of God, we should obey God. And we pray that every day. I hope you really mean it if you pray, thy will be done. So we are praying that we will obey God. So to do the will of God is the essence of holiness. We have to do the will of God. And so to do the will of God, that means we must have charity. Because how do we practice charity is that we keep the commandments, right? We keep the commandments. Because we have faith when we believe in God. But how do you put faith into practice? It's by keeping the commandments. So if there's no keeping of the commandments, no charity, our faith is a dead faith, not a living faith. So we need charity. But charity goes beyond commandments. It also goes into the counsel, the inspiration. So God gives us counsel and inspiration. God gives us suggestion, advice. You know, tell us to do something. That may not be required by commandment or precepts, but it's something good for our salvation. Tonight you are all here. You don't have to be here. It's no commandment that thou shalt go to prayer group. You're all here because of counsel. It's good for you. Because you're all here because you respond to that invitation of God to do more than obligation. Our obligation is to go to Mass on Sunday. But whenever you go beyond that, if you go to a prayer meeting, a prayer group, or many of you here are Legion of Mary, you know, it's beyond the obligation. You don't have to do it. Even though you are not a prayer group member, even though you are not a Legion of Mary, you won't go to hell. If you miss out on Sunday through your own fault, you will. But you see, what is of obligation, we must do. But of counsel, you do that, it's helpful for your salvation, it's helpful for you to grow in holiness. So, charity, you know, when we have charity, we keep the commandments, we also do what beyond the commandment, the counsel. And then devotion and charity, they cannot be separated. You know, devotion means that we will do those things like commandments and counsel more eagerly, more earnestly, more diligently. And that devotion. So you will keep the commandment with greater love and dedication. You will do the counsel better. So sometimes, you know, when we do the counsel, we may be doing that, become a routine, you know. It can be, you go to the Legion of Mary meeting, let's get it over, you know. Or you go to the prayer meeting, you know, sometimes you may become just a routine. But if that's devotion, you do those things with more eagerness, more joy, more but also more at ease and also diligently. So that devotion. So St. Francis de Sales, you know, in the few chapters of the Introduction to Devout Life, he pointed out that, you know, devotion is for everybody. And it's something that is, you know, it's something that people quite often think about. If you're to lead a devout life, they will think about as a gloomy picture. You shouldn't do this, you shouldn't do that, you have to fast, you have to do penance. You know, in the old days, people use discipline, you have to flog yourself. They will see a gloomy picture. Look like you almost have a coffin ready, you can just jump into it and sleep there. They saw the gloomy picture. But St. Francis himself pointed out that, you know, devotion actually is a joyful thing. It's a joyful thing. And also when thinking about that, I also want to point into St. Teresa of Avila. You know, she said that a sad nun is a bad nun. I'm more afraid of one unhappy sister than a crowd of evil spirits. And then she said, what would happen if we heed what little sense of humor we had? Let each of us humbly use this to cheer others. You know, Ricardo, like thinking about monastic life, you know, you will know that. If you live in a community, there's one unhappy monk or seminarian.
I remember the phrase.
you co-sing Teresa. You know, a sad nun is a bad nun. I'm more afraid of one unhappy monk than or unhappy brother than a host of evil spirit. And then she prayed, God deliver me from sad faced saints. So I think quite often, the saints that we know about, you know, the blessed and the blessed and the saints I mentioned a few times ago, a lot of them, you know, we see that they suffer quite a bit, you know, they suffer quite a bit, but when they first started, you know, they are not quite the one who purposely look for those kind of suffering, you know, when they come, they accept it, you know. And then, of course, like Blessed Alexandria and Martha Rubin, they will be a bit in a special situation. But at first, they are pretty abundant disposition. And then, when they really sense it's the call of God, that they have that special calling of suffering, then they would ask for more suffering. But if somebody, you know, in a normal circumstance, suddenly want to ask for more suffering, you know, or appear to be sad, you know, sometimes it can be, quite often it can be a sign of spiritual pride. And so, devotion, according to St. Francis de Sales, is a spiritual sugar that gives sweetness to mortification, to discipline, to penance, to sacrifice and suffering. So devotion will help you in those situations to be able to take those things with joy. So I think I meant to mention that even during summertime, when we go through that, hope that you have 33 days of morning glory, about the four spiritual example of consecration to Mary. St. Louis Marie de Montfort, he mentioned that if you consecrate yourself to Mary, you might have more suffering, but you might not feel it because of the spiritual growth that you have. So that devotion helped you to even, so some people, it's just like some of you here, you know, you exercise more than I do. So when you have to run 1 kilometer, for me, I mean, 5 kilometers, after that running, I will be half dead, but for you, no big deal, because you are stronger than I am. So for spiritual life, when we get stronger, even though you might take on more suffering and sacrifice, it's just like running 5 kilometers, no big deal, because you are strong already. Yeah, we should try that out. so you see that devotion is like making spiritually strong that you will find that modification, the other thing will be like a sweetness. And for some strong people, running tank limited is sweetness. What a joy to run that far, you know. For some, we don't feel, but exercise is a torture. You know, so for those who don't have much devotion, it's a torture to do penance, to pray the rosary, to do all different activities, spiritual activities. But for those who have devotion, it's a sweetness. But I would say that also in the spiritual life, quite often you will more easily first to find sweetness maybe in spiritual reading, and then also in prayer. You know, those are the habits that is more easy to form, and it's more easy that you find sweetness in those. But to find sweetness and to form a habit of self-denial and mortification and penance, that will take a bit more effort. I try to start with something simple, like the angel told the children of Fatima, you know, make whatever you can a sacrifice. And like St. Jose Maria Escrivá, we talked about him last time, that, you know, he would do something like simple on the table. He would, if you're eating, sometimes there's a lot of option of food if you eat with other people. So he would take a bit of the more of the food that he didn't like and take less of the food that he liked. Or because, you know, later on, you know, because he also traveled, you know, as a founder of Office City, he traveled. And then when there was a traveling, when there was a famous scene, he was on ship, you know, famous, beautiful scene, scenery, you know, he would be staying inside the ship and not go to sea because he wanted to make that a sacrifice. You know, simple thing like that. But of course, the saints, they will also remind us that mortification of the body is important, that we don't look at bad things, we control our appetite. I always think even more important of mortification, I will repeat that in the future, but now I just say that I think an even more important type of mortification is of the heart. Sometimes you can have some a vain and useless and even dangerous desire or thought into your mind. Sometimes you can have daydreams, and that you can think about things that is not necessary. If you can, in the first moment of those kind of thought and desire, to dismiss the thought and not to think about that, that's a good practice. That will save you a lot of time, and you will fall asleep much more easier at night time. So, that's my 2 cents. But so I think that the interior modification, the modification of the mind and the heart, is much more important and much more practical sometimes, and of course both are important for the modification of the body. Anyhow, so that devotion is joyful, it's also universal. We mentioned about that. That's an important theme of the Second Vatican Council, that the theme that Jose Maria Escrivá was really grateful that the Vatican Council too was making that prominent universal call to holiness, and also the importance of lay people in the mission of the Church. Those are the two themes he gave advice to the Council Fathers. And then John Paul II, you know, who in his pontificate implement the Vatican Council too, he also emphasized the universal call to holiness by the act of also canonizing and beatifying a lot of saints from all vocations, from different ages, from different locations. So, John Paul II, he always should devotion hinder no one but rather perfect everything. Okay, sorry, I think I misquoted that. That's from St. Paul himself. But John Paul II himself said, true holiness does not mean a flight from the world. Rather, it lies in the effort to incarnate the gospel in everyday life, in the family, at school, at work, in social and political involvement. And then St. Jose Maria Escrivá would always have that motto. I think that the motto of Office Dei, that really famous, you know, the three part of the motto: sanctify our job in life, sanctify ourselves in our work, or sanctify our work in life, sanctify ourselves in work and through work, and sanctify others through work. So that's the motto. So sanctify our work, sanctify ourselves in work, and sanctify others through work, to make it more sinfully, you know. And then he also mentioned, do everything for love, thus there will be no little things. Everything will be big. Perseverance in little things for love is heroism. So he will be always talking about the little thing that, you know, when we diligently finish the task given to us, even though it's a routine task every single day, we do that well for love of God, that's a big thing. And then he also talking about, I think I mentioned that, you know, you get up right on time in the morning, you go to bed on time, that's also a thing that also helps us to become holy. So the few chapters is talking about devotion is for everyone. You know, devotion is, you know, and charity, they cannot be separated. And devotion should be adapted to be suitable to your own vocation. And then if your devotion is true, it should enhance your vocation. It will make you a better person where you are. If it's something that hinder your vocation, that is not true devotion. So if you are doing something that make you to be, let's say you are a mother, and then you do think that cause you neglect your family, you know, that would not be a good thing. But also when we are on the way to the devout life, we have to start with something. And that something would be, we need to purify our soul. Our soul must be cleansed. And St. Francis de Sales pointed out that when we, our soul to be purified, we need to be patient. Because, you know, the ordinary purification and healing, either is for your body, if you get wounded and you need to be healed, it's bit by bit, right? So if you're wounded by sins, your healing is also little by little. It's not like magic thing. No, it's not magic. It's not one moment and then it's not done. It's not like that you suddenly, you know, you are really sorry, you pray, and suddenly you got a halo. but it's important that we know that it's happening bit by bit, little by little. And so it's progressing slowly. Really slowly. And also in our spiritual life, some failures or setbacks is something that will happen. So on the one hand, we should not get discouraged by them. If you find yourself fail, that's normal, get up and carry on. But also on the other hand, you shouldn't just ignore, thinking, I'm doing pretty well, but actually you ignore all your shortcomings and imperfection and sin, turn a blind eye on your own imperfection while you see imperfection in other people. So avoid both extremes. So not to be discouraged, but also not to overlook that. Because our growing in holiness consists that we have to struggle against our own imperfection and weakness and sinfulness. And so we have to acknowledge them to fight them. It's just like when you go to see a doctor, you must find out what's wrong, right? In order to cure the sickness properly. If you just want to ignore, you know, then you won't get a cure. So The first thing we must all be purified from is mortal sin. And mortal sin is purified, of course, by the sacraments of confession. So we are obliged to confess all our mortal sins committed after our baptism. And St. Francis de Sales also recommend a practice of general confession. General confession is to repeat all your previous confessions or repeat some of your previous confessions. General confession is an obligation if a person have made bad confession in the past. So have some mortal sin, but purposely hide the mortal sin. And so if you hide a mortal sin, then your confession is invalid, right? And then if one confession is invalid, and you have mortal sin still, and you go to a confession again, it will still be invalid, because you haven't confessed your mortal sin properly. So in that situation, the person must make the effort to confess all the mortal sins since the person's last good confession. For some people, it can be years ago, you know. St. John Bosco encountered a case, no offense, an elderly man. He went to an elderly man, highly respected by people, you know, did all kinds of good things, and then dying, received the last sacrament. And then when St. John Bosco go and ask him, how are you doing? He said, not good, not good. And then St. John Bosco said, but I heard that you already made your last sacrament. And then the elderly man said, you know, do you have faculty to hear confession yet? Because he was a young new priest. He said, yes, but in that situation, any priest can hear confession. And then he said, is there anybody here in the room? Nobody. But he didn't know that one person wasn't able to go out on time. He was hiding behind the curtain. So the man said, you know, So what happened was that he committed a mortal sin when he was young. He was afraid to confess that. And so all the years from his first communion on, all the communion was unworthy communion. All the confession was unworthy confession. Because all those years he was hiding that mortal sin. And so, but at the end, you know, he was able to make that confession to St. John Bosco. And so St. John Bosco, you know, he made a good confession, and St. John Bosco gave him absolution. And then the man say, thanking the mercy of God, and then he died. And then another story of St. John Bosco was that, you know, there was a young boy, you know, when he was dying, he called for St. John Bosco, but he was away. So they got the parish priest to hear the boy's confession, but he still called for St. John Bosco, and then he died. And then 8 hours after he died, St. John Bosco arrived, you know, the grandma was praying, and St. John Bosco said the boy was not dead, he was only asleep. He was dead for 8 hours, and the grandma looked at him. So he gave him the blessing. I think I will give you that is the at the end. Actually, every time I give you, Mary, have a blessing. And then the boy suddenly got up, and the body is still cold and pale. And then the first thing he asked is to make confession. You know, he told St. John Bosco, I got a really bad dream. I saw myself being cast down to hell, because he was hiding a mortal sin in his last confession. But Our Lady came and said, you know, the judgment is not yet done yet. So and then the blessing of St. John Bosco brought him back to life. And so he made his confession, and St. John Bosco gave him absolution. And then when the family gathered in, you know, basically St. John Bosco gave him the option. You know, heaven is now open for you, but if you want, you can stay here. But he didn't want to lose heaven, so he wanted to go. So he lied down again and died.
Who was standing behind his presence?
Huh?
Who was standing behind
his presence? The one, we don't know, but it was somebody who eventually, I think maybe after the death of St. John Bosco, he gave that testimony. So that's why it's as a priest, you know, sometimes it's also happened that we encounter, sometimes we help people to pull things out from people, because you know, I can sense when somebody is not making good confession sometimes. And sometimes people do come voluntarily to confess something in their heart for years, you know, that can happen. So that's something is not to be afraid of, I should say, because even you have a lot of different sins, you know, hardly anything can surprise us as priests. hardly, you know, hardly
you've
anything.
You've heard it all, and you've heard the worst, you've heard it all, and it's, you've heard it all.
I would say pretty much, pretty much, pretty much, yeah. So it's not to be afraid to confess to the priest. And you know, when people have that courage, you know, sometimes I would think that, you know, when people have that courage to confess what has been in their heart for years, I think that itself is a pity enough penance. I think you should admire those people, you know, who are able to be able to say things as it is, you know. So I think as a priest, it's also something you also try to remember that as a priest, that, you know, people do that, it's already a big penance for them. And also, so we try our best to just forget it, to forget from our mind too, you know, because it shouldn't be, you know. Let's say if I know you personally, whatever you tell me shouldn't affect the way I treat you. So the best policy for us priests, according to one of the confessional guide or manual, is that you after you hear confession, you do as if you never heard it at all. So you don't try to think about that at all. You just try to like get out of your mind. And quite often, you know, the grace of God do allow that to happen. You know, sometimes I heard some really dramatic thing in the confessional, but for me now, quite often, to relate what sin to what people, I have a hard time doing it, because, you know, I pray to God that I will forget it. And you know, and I think it's a safeguard too, you know, because, you know, to break the seal of confession, how do you break a seal? It's saying who is the person and confess what sin. That's how you directly break the seal of confession. So if you cannot match the sin with the people, you don't cannot break the seal at all. So anyhow, that's about confession. Now, general confession is a necessity if somebody have omit mortal sin purposely in life and haven't confessed that mortal sin. For other people, general confession is a recommendation. It's a recommendation for your spiritual well-being, because it helps you to achieve self-knowledge. If you think about the sins, after a number of years, they help you to see the pattern of your life. And also, it might help you to find out, to see the cause of your sin, the reason. It also helps you to achieve deeper humility. It's humiliating to confess sins. For everybody. Even for us priests, you know, to go to confession to another priest, sometimes it can be humiliating. You have to admit your own wrongdoing to your brother. So it's humiliating for everybody. So to make a general confession is something that will help you to achieve deeper humility. But also it increases your peace of mind. So it's recommended, you know, if people can make general confession once a year, it's a good idea. And oftentimes it'll be after a retreat. It can be a good idea to make a general confession. Now, practically, if it is like if you go to a church for confession, this lineup, it's really hard to make general confession. It's something that normally, if it is general confession, should be by appointment, not like you line up, you know, Saturday afternoon, go to the confessional, half an hour later you come up, and nobody else can come in, you know, because normally the left lineup confession, I would say 5 to 10 minutes no longer than that, and so if it is something that covers a long period of time, like a general confession, it should be by special appointment. So if you want any appointment ready, no problem. I won't charge you anything. And I will be happy to help you with general confession. And then of course that effect is called confession of devotion. And then if you see something that, you know, if you do that let's say on a regular basis, of course. Now, to be more exact, outside compassion, of course, we please do not try to think about anything at all, not to affect of anything you confess, you know, in our interaction, you know, in daily life with the people that we know we heard confession from. If the person do make clear, the person want to have spiritual advice or spiritual direction in confession, that would be a bit different. Because that means the person want you to use the information to give direction, right? So in that situation, the person can have definitely two ways of doing it. It can be only within confession. You come, you're a regular customer, you're a regular person, you know, you come regularly. And so I can only use the information you give me within confession. So I can think about, okay, last time the person confessed that, okay, this time this, okay, you link them together, make a judgment, give a good advice. And so, but it's only within confession. But if the person want more than that, you know, the person want, because, you know, the seal of confession is so serious that I cannot bring up anything you tell me in confession outside the confessional. So if you confess something to me in the confession, I cannot say, "Hi, Santa, you told me that in the confessional. Hi, something now." I cannot even do that. Even though nobody else around, I cannot talk to her like that. It would be a sin for me to do that. So, but what a penitent can do is the penitent can tell the priest, "I give you explicit permission. You can use the information I give you in confession." In the context of spiritual direction. So when you have spiritual direction, let's say, and because sometimes you come to a priest for spiritual advice, then if I got your explicit permission, then we can also talk about freely about what is being exchanged in the confession. You got an idea now? So that's how it works. So sometimes also don't embarrass the priest. Sometimes it can happen. People may tell something to the priest in the confession, and then outside confession, the person brings the matter up. It's a bit uneasy, but I think according to most theologians, if they voluntarily bring it up, you can presume already that is a permission given. So that's what the moral theologian would say. But I would feel more comfortable with that explicit permission to me. You know, otherwise I always feel uneasy when somebody bring something up, you know, tell me something in the confessional and then bring the topic up outside of confession. Because it's hard to determine, you know, is that really a permission given to me or not? You know, it's a bit uneasy in that situation. So St. Francis says, you know, thinking about talking about that, you know, about confession, he wrote, "Hesitate not then to open your heart fully in confession, for in proportion as your sins go forth, the precious merit of Christ's passion will come in and fill you with all blessings." So when you open your heart, you receive more. And Jesus also told St. Faustina, you know, the more you trust, you know, when you go to confession, the more grace you receive. And also, Jesus told St. Faustina that, you know, Jesus is hiding in the priest in the confessional. And when the priest gives absolution, you know, the blood and water from the heart of Jesus flow into your soul when the priest gives you absolution. So it's important for us to have that trust when we approach the confessional. And also St. Faustina found something is really important and helpful is that don't forget to pray for the priest to hear your confession. Mm-hmm. She finds that, you know, when she do that, you know, the priest is smarter, able to give good advice. So, after confession, another thing that is important is our contrition. To make progress in the spiritual life, it's important that we give up sin, but also we have to give up the affection to sin. So St. Francis has pointed out that, you know, some penitents, though they forsake sin outwardly, do not forsake the love of sin. That is to say, they resolve to sin no more, But it is with reluctance that they abstain from the fatal delights of sin. Their hearts renounce it and seek to depart, but they frequently look longingly behind them as the lost wife. So he might be thinking about, oh, how it would be good if that is not a sin at all. You know, it's so fun to talk about that gossip, you know. It would be a good thing if it's not a sin at all and we can talk about that. So it's a bit of a longing of that delight that is forbidden. So it's some kind of affection for sin. And it also, Saint Francis pointed out that you have that strong contrition that will extend to sin and the affection to sin, a good practice is meditations. When you think about holy things, it helps you to achieve contrition of heart. So in a portion of that book, he actually gives some concrete meditation for people to make use of. Topics about God, about creation, about why God made me, about the different favors of God, about sin, about death, about judgment, about heaven, about hell, about choosing heaven, about choosing the devout life. So those are the topics of meditation. And each of the topics, he gives points of meditation in that book. So quite an important portion about that is about meditation. So basically, he would think about, you know, if you meditate, that can lead you to deep contrition, which will also lead you to a sincere confession, and those will help you to wipe out your mortal sin and your affection for mortal sin. But he pointed out that it's important that we also wipe out our affection for venial sin. And St. Francis says, you know, follow the Council of Trent, he pointed out we cannot get rid of venial sin completely. It will be a special grace of God. But we can get rid of the affection for venial sin. That means we can get rid of committing venial sin deliberately. But you know, some of those who are semi-conscious, you know, out of weakness, we cannot avoid them completely. That's why we pray every day, forgive us our trespasses. That's what the Bible says, even a just man falls 7 times a day, many times, because of our sins of weakness. So, sins of weakness cannot get rid of, but sins that are deliberate, we can get rid of. So he mentioned that, you know, there is a wide difference between a chance falsehood concerning some trivial matter. So if you say, if you caught by surprise, say a small lie, that can happen, which is the result of carelessness. And there's another difference, is and taking pleasure in falsehood or deliberately telling lies. So it's a big difference. So in some small matter, because they're careless, they say the wrong thing, you told a lie, that's a weakness. But if you really love falsehood, I enjoy the art of telling lies, that's deliberate, that's bad. You see the difference? So sometimes venial sin can be weakness, it can be deliberate in nature. So he mentioned inclination to mortal sin is opposed to charity. And inclination to venial sin opposed to devotion. Remember, the two are linked, devotion and charity. And then of course, mortal sin kills the soul spiritually, and venial sin that are deliberate graciously wounds the soul. And then he also mentioned another aspect of importance is that we need detachment. And so he's talking about something that we all enjoy, and sometimes we do it from time to time, like a sport, you know, like a festival, you know, party, drama, you know. He said that those kind of thing, you know, the evil is not in doing them, but in caring for it. So it's things that we enjoy, but don't let those things absorb you. Don't just party, always party. But remember, we need to put priority that we put God first, our prayer first, our spiritual life first, and then the other thing will be a treat here and there. But if you always start from the morning, you think about party, then you will be just a party woman. Yeah. So you see what he's talking about, right? Yeah. So things that are for enjoyment, they are only for enjoyment. But something more important should be our main occupation and also our main thing that in the first priority in our life. So that's part one of the introduction of the Bath Line. We go through the whole part one already.
How many parts are there?
How many parts are there? Let me check. I don't have the English version with me right now. I do have a Chinese version. So let me see. So yeah, and then he also mentioned one part because it's a bit hard to put into writing, but I think it's easier to explain in word. I didn't quite include in the article. Is that he also mentioned that some people they have some kind of evil inclination. Because sometimes something, for example, I think that's a Paula, who was a friend of Saint Jerome. When her husband died, you know, she was grieving, like crying. So that's her inclination. She intend to cry, and so depressed. And so Saint Jerome had to remind her, you know, you shouldn't be like that, you know, cheer up, you know. So there's kind of inclination that because of the temperament, because the person is like that, it's easy to form into a bad habit. So the Saint also asks us to be watchful and more have moderation in those kind of inclination that can easy to form into evil habit. So things like that. He also so those are the couple details. So after mortal sin, he talked about venial sin. After venial sin, he talked about that being attached to entertainment, and then after that, he talked about the evil inclination. So he also talked about those kind of things which we purify. So the purification is those are the things. So sometimes you may think, okay, I'm no mortal sin, wonderful, and then talk about, okay, venial sin, okay, and then later on he's talking about the imperfection. So it's go further. So basically, talking about when you talk about degree of spiritual life, is always room to improve. And then as I mentioned, come back what I mentioned earlier, I mentioned that, you know, to form a sweetness in prayer is more easy than you have sweetness in self-denial and mortification. So when you look into what is being mortified or denied, you know why, right? Because talking about mortal sin and the venial sin and then even entertainment and evil inclination, that's a long road of purification, you know, of self-denial. But also, there have been a lot of situations. There's a beautiful book, I don't think it's in print anymore, it's by a Carthusian monk called Life of Man in God. I think something like that. It's an interesting book because the monk he gave survey to different people that they fill in, and they're surveyed that can see where they are in their spiritual life. And then in that survey, he dealing with the issue of being lukewarm. He find that some people, even some religious, you know, or some lay people, at one point they were pretty fervent in their spiritual life, but then they fell into lukewarmness. Their relationship with God become cooled down, become like lifeless, you know, become really lukewarm. And quite often the reason is because those people, they neglected prayer, but also they neglected self-denial. So when people neglect those two important aspects, it's so easy to fall into lukewarmness. And quite often, the self-denial is the kind of thing that's so easy to overlook. Because it's more easy to have a sweetness for prayer, But it's a bit more difficult to have that for self-denial or sacrifice and penance. And so there's something that is a challenge for every one of us not to overlook that area, you know, in the process of the spiritual life. And that, not overlooking that, it also helps with purification of that as a beginning of a spiritual life. So, part one is done. There's part two. Part two is a lot of different spiritual practices. And so that would be part two. Part three is the different ways to grow in spiritual life in the practice of virtues. It's also talking about chastity, about humility, about friendship, true friend and false friend, bad friend, and then also talking about how to speak. And then there's part four, how to fight temptation. And then he also has part five, which is the wrapping up. So five different parts, you know. So we finished part one already. Yeah.